Hutton gave Mill a requisition chit to get some from the medical quartermaster, and told him to spend a month recording each and every headache, with signs he'd noticed of it coming on. It wasn't much, but Mill grinned ear to ear. Often people just wanted to know that they weren't fools or weaklings for coming in. They wanted to know their pains were real, and that there was something, even something small, they could do about the problem. Simple affirmation could be worth more than medication. He waved farewell to Mill, grateful that, despite several lifetimes' worth of tragedy squeezed into the years between then and now, much of his surgeon's training remained. He walked over to Syl, who had settled down with her legs over the side of the book. Today she was wearing something akin to what his mother often wore, an unassuming skirt and a buttoned blouse, faintly Thalen in style. "So," he said, "when did you learn to read?"
"Last week."
"You learned to read in a week?"
"It's not as hard as it seemed at first. I figured you'd need someone to read for you as a surgeon. I think I might be able to become surgery tools, too. I mean, not a scalpel since, you know, I don't actually cut flesh. But your father was using a little hammer the other day."
"For testing reflexes," Kaladin said. "It's best with a cloth wrap on the front or rubber. Can you become things other than metal? I'd love not to have to share the stethoscope with father." Another expensive tool that Taravangian's surgeons had provided for them upon request.
"I don't know," she said. I feel like there is a lot to explore with our powers, Kaladin. Things that in the past maybe they didn't have the time or resources to think about, because they were always fighting."
He nodded, thoughtful. Syl got a far-off look in her eyes, and when she noticed him watching, she plastered a smile on her face. That struck him as fake. She seemed to be trying a little too hard today. Or maybe he was projecting. He stretched, then stepped out and peeked into the waiting room. Only a handful of people remained today, so Kaladin had time for a short break. He walked along the hallway into the family room, which had a door out onto the communal balcony. As he'd hoped, when they'd come here, that wide balcony now served as a general-purpose meeting place for the people of Hearthstone, like a town square. Laundry flapped on lines to one side. Children ran and played. People sat and chatted. Kaladin trailed out to the edge of the balcony. Below, he could see Dalinar's armies gathering for the trip to Aesir. He forced himself to look and to acknowledge he wasn't going with them. A figure in blue streaked by, soaring through the air. Leighton must have seen Kaladin, because a short time later, a larger group of Windrunners hovered up near the balcony. Most everyone stopped their activities, children running to the balcony's edge. As one, the Windrunners saluted. The Bridge Four salute. Though most had never been in Bridge Four and didn't use the salute to one another, they always gave it to him and other members of the original Windrunners. He returned the Bridge Four salute to them all, tapping his wrists together. The 50-odd Windrunners turned and streaked back down. Below, light flashed in a circle around the Oath Gate, making an entire battalion of troops vanish. They'd learned that how much stormlight was expended for a transfer depended on the Radiant operating the device. The more experienced the Radiant, the less stormlight required. Jasnah was probably operating today. She could do things with her powers that were well beyond the rest of them. Though she didn't show it off, she'd plainly sworn the fourth ideal, the one Kaladin would never reach.
"They're all going away," Syl said softly, landing on his shoulder.
"Not all of them," Kaladin said. "Around 20 will stay to guard the tower."
"But none of your friends."
It was true. All the former members of Bridge Four were going with Dalinar. Maybe Relaine would stay behind and work on the fields. Though he often chose to go with the Windrunner support staff to help out there with Dabit and a few Squire hopefuls. Watching them all fly off, it was impossible not to feel so very alone.
"Remember the peace you have felt this last week," Kaladin thought. "Don't be sorry for yourself.
be excited for the new path forward you're making. The thoughts didn't work. It still hurt to see them all leave. Hurt to know Shallan and Adolin had gone off to Shadesmar without him. He had his parents and his new brother, and he appreciated that. But the men and women of Bridge Four had become equally important to him. That part of his life was over. Best not to dwell on it. Kaladin returned to the exam room. Hawen was waiting, so he sent her for the next patient. He settled into a rhythm, seeing patients, occasionally sticking his head into the next exam room to ask his father for advice on a diagnosis or remedy. He dealt with an unusual number of coughs. Apparently there was something moving through the tower, a sickness that left people with mucus in their lungs and an overall feeling of aches. He'd never encountered anything like it. His father had been tracking it, though, and said that Carbranthian surgeons reported it wasn't deadly. A plague from the West that, when all was said and done, didn't live up to its reputation. The sickness barely attracted any plague spren, though there didn't seem to be many around the tower to attract, so that would be part of it. He recommended lots of rest, fluids, and hand washing. The day stretched long, and the patients slowed to a trickle. One woman stood out to him. She was a refugee, and while getting treated for her coughs, she asked if Kaladin had seen her uncle. She'd heard of someone matching his description, arriving in Hearthstone immediately before the evacuation. Kaladin had her wait and went looking for his father. Lirin's exam room was empty, but Hasina's voice rose from the waiting room, so Kaladin walked out to ask her about the refugee's uncle. Right before he arrived, Kaladin heard a familiar voice that made him freeze in place.
"Always been like this," the gruff voice said. "Been clean for, what, 6 months now? Storm me. 6 months. That's something. Can't stand the battle, though. Not near longer. It's gotten inside me, see? Itches at my brain."
Kaladin burst into the waiting room to find Teft chatting with his mother. The older man was out of uniform, wearing common trousers and shirt, his gray beard trimmed. Not as short as an Ardent's beard, but not distinctively long, either. There was no sign of his spren, Fenderana, though she generally preferred to hide from sight.
"Teft," Kaladin said, "you were mobilized. Why aren't you with everyone else?"
"Can't go," Teft said. "Too much wrong with my brain. Went and spoke to the Blackthorn, and he said it would be a good idea for me to step down."
"You... Teft, you're doing better. You have no reason to step down from duty."
Teft shrugged.
"Felt like it was time. Got a bit of a cough, too, and an ache in my knee, even when there aren't storms. War's for young kids, not old dried-up pieces of bark."
Hasina cocked her head, seeming confused, but Syl landed on Kaladin's shoulder and gasped at seeing Teft, then clapped excitedly.
"Rock is gone," Teft said, "and Moash... Moash is worse than gone. Sigsel needs to lead the rest of them without me being baggage to bother him. You and I were the start of this, though. Figure we ought to stick together."
"Teft," Kaladin said, softer, stepping forward. "You can't follow me here."
Teft lifted his chin, defiant.
"I order you to go back to duty," Kaladin said.
"Oh, orders. You ain't got knots on your shoulder now, lad. You can't order me to do anything."
He sat down in a waiting room chair, folding his arms.
"I feel sick. Not right in the head. Nobody can argue that ain't so."
Kaladin looked to his mother, feeling helpless. She shrugged.
"You shouldn't force someone into war, Kaladin. Not unless you want to be like Amaram." "You're taking Teft's side?" Kaladin asked.
"Lad," Teft said softly, "you ain't the only one with a mind full of horrors. You ain't the only one whose hands shake now and then, thinking of it all. I need a rest, too. That's Kalek's own truth."
He was exaggerating. Kaladin knew he was. The man, while prone to addictive and self-destructive behavior, was not battle-shocked. That wasn't something you could easily prove, however, especially when the man in question was as obstinate as Teft. Teft unfolded his arms, then folded them again as if to make the gesture more firmly. His clothing was neat and clean, but there was always something a little frayed about Teft. You got the sense that the uniform never quite fit him, as if Teft was half a size between standard measurements. That said, he was, to his core, a military man. If there was one thing a good sergeant knew, it was to never let your officer go into an unknown situation alone. Who knew what trouble a Light Eyes would get into without his common sense tagging along? Teft took ideas like that to heart, and Kaladin knew, meeting Teft's eyes, that the man was never going to budge. "Fine," Kaladin said. Teft leaped to his feet, gave Kaladin's mother a little salute, then fell into step behind Kaladin as they walked toward the exam room.
"So, what are we doing?" Teft asked.
"You said you wanted a diagnosis," Kaladin said, stopping outside the door.
"Nah, no, I'm crazy already. You going to poke at me until I snap? Skip that part. What are we doing today? Binding wounds?"
Kaladin gave him a level stare. Teft just stared back, stubborn as a storm. Well, Kaladin had trained them all as surgeon's assistants, with knowledge of basic field medicine. He could do worse than Teft as an aide. It didn't seem like he had a choice either way. That should have frustrated him. Instead, he found himself feeling warm. They weren't all gone.
"Thank you, Teft," he whispered. "You shouldn't have given up so much, but thank you."
Teft nodded.
"There is a refugee woman here looking for her uncle," Kaladin said. "Shall we see if we can track him down for her?"
Shallan's sketchbook. Cryptics. I doubt it's truly possible to capture the shapes of these patterns in a drawing. They are constantly in motion, lines that flow and twist, according to some unknown principle. There is a subtle variety of unique forms in the shape of their robes. The body appears to be made of glassy solid planes that casually fold and split into new angles as they move. In so many ways, cryptics are more abstract than other spren. They have such bony hands, and yet I am nearly certain they do not have bones. Some appear to have hands chiseled from obsidian, while others appear carved from white marble. Cryptics have feet, but they aren't often visible below the long robes. I've never seen a cryptic running. I expect they would look very silly. 24. Full of awe.
Endowment at least responded to my overtures, though I have not been able to locate invention again following our initial contact.
Radiant did not want to be in control at the moment. As the second day of their voyage dawned, or, well, occurred, since the sun didn't move in Shadesmar, Shallan retreated entirely. Spending the last day feigning an upbeat attitude had left her exhausted. Unfortunately, after Vale's stunt in seizing control a few days back, violating the compact, neither wanted her to be in charge. So it rested on Radiant to rise, do her exercises, and then try to figure out something to do with her day. Adolin's soldiers busied themselves tidying the camp space on the barge, then doing the multitude of other things, like sharpening weapons or oiling armor, that military men used to pass the time. Zhu was chatting with the other Peak Spren, Ashkam was reading, and Adolin was caring for his swords. Radiant set Beryl and Ishna to recording observations about Shadesmar, and assigned Vatha to see if the Peaksbren sailors needed any help, and what to do with herself. "Find the spy," Shallan whispered deep inside. "We need to find out which one is the spy." "I am ill-equipped for espionage," Radiant thought. She walked the perimeter of the deck, observing the Radiant Spren. 4 different varieties, each unique. "Perhaps you can do drawings for now, until we decide to let Vale finish her punishment. Finding the spy isn't something we need to do immediately, after all." But Shallan didn't emerge. Sometimes this was how it was. They couldn't always choose which of them would be in control. But Shallan's growing tension, that was worrisome. "You're still troubled by how Vale violated our compact, aren't you?" Radiant asked. "We're supposed to be getting better, not worse," Shallan thought. "Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone slips." "Not you," Shallan thought. "You have never seized control like that." Radiant felt an immediate stab of guilt, but there was nothing to be done about that. Best to move forward. Radiant took a seat on the deck near the railing, then flipped through ELA's book as she listened to the churning beads. Together, the three had figured out most everything in the book. The place names were locations beyond the various expanses in Shadesmar, worlds beyond the edge of the map. Pattern had confirmed this by chatting with a few other Spren who had met travelers from these places. Another section of the book contained ELA's conjectures and information about the leader of the Ghostbloods, the mysterious Thydakar. Whoever this was, Radiant thought, from the context of what was written, that he must be someone from one of those far-off worlds. There was a final clue in the book, one that Radiant found most curious. ELA had discovered that the Ghostbloods were obsessed with a specific Spren named Ba-Edo Mishram. That was a name from myth, one of the Unmade. It had been this Spren who had taken over for Odium following the final desolation. She had granted the singers forms of power. By capturing Ba-Edo Mishram, locking her in a gemstone, humankind had stolen the minds of the singers in ancient times. They knew this from the brief but poignant messages left by the ancient Radiants before they abandoned Urithiru. By cross-referencing those with musings in ELA's book, Radiant began to get a picture of what had happened so many centuries ago. She was increasingly certain Moraes was hunting the gemstone that held Ba-Edo Mishram. He'd likely thought he would find it at Urithiru. But if it had been there, then the Midnight Mother, who had controlled the place for centuries, surely would have found it and rescued her ally. "He also wants to transport Stormlight off-world," Shallan thought, emerging. "I believe he was honest in that point. So perhaps these two are related? Perhaps Ba-Edo Mishram can help him in this quest?" "You'd do better at connecting these ideas than I will," Radiant thought to her. "Why don't you take control?" "Is that what this is?" Shallan demanded. "You're trying to trick me? Go find the spy." "It is not my area of expertise, Shallan." "Fine," she thought. "It's time to let Vale out, then. I vote to end her punishment." Radiant subsided, and Vale surprisingly found herself in control. It had been 4 days now since she'd taken over and invited the 3 most questionable Lightweavers to join the expedition. She leaped to her feet, looking around the barge. It felt good to be in charge again, particularly in this place of mystery and secrets. Shadesmar, the bead ocean, a black sky, strange Spren, and infinite questions to investigate. It was the perfect place for Shallan. "Find the spy," Shallan said. Vale hesitated, then sat back down and pointedly dug through Shallan's satchel. She got out a charcoal pencil and flipped to an empty page, then began to draw. "What are you doing?" Shallan demanded. "You're a terrible artist." "I know," Vale whispered. "And you hate watching me try." She made a crude attempt at drawing Wapam, the peak spren, as he thumped past. The result was cringeworthy. "Why?" Shallan asked. "I'm sorry," Vale said, "for violating the compact. I needed to get those three on the mission so I could watch them. But I should have persuaded you two first." "So go investigate." "Radiant is right," Vale said. "That can wait." It was painful for her to admit, but something was more important. She continued her terrible drawing. "We're not going to let you retreat and hide," Radiant thought, and Vale could feel her relief in discovering the two of them agreed on this. "Something is wrong, Shallan. Something bigger than what Vale did. Something that's affecting all of us, making us erratic." "I used to think you kept secrets from Adolin because you were like me and enjoyed the thrill of being part of the Ghostbloods," Vale said. "I was wrong. There's something more, isn't there? Why do you keep lying? What is going on?" Shallan said. The dark thing stirred inside her. Formless, the personality that could be. The dark thing that represented Shallan's fears, compounded. Vale had her flaws. She was a drunkard and had trouble with scope and perspective. She represented a whole host of attributes Shallan wanted, but knew she shouldn't. Yet, at her core, Vale had a singular purpose. She'd been created to protect Shallan, and she would send herself to damnation before she let that formless thing take her place. She gripped her pencil and started drawing Adolin, really, really poorly. "I don't care," Shallan thought. Vale gave him a unibrow. "Vale!" Vale drew him with crossed eyes. "That's going too far." Vale put him in an ugly coat and cut off knee-length trousers. "Fine," Shallan said, ripping the page out of the sketchbook and wadding it up. "You win, insufferable woman." She settled back against the barge's railing and took a deep breath. Then, as the other two insisted, she let herself relax. It really, really was all right. Yes. Someone had used the communication cube to call Marais. Yes, someone had invaded her things. Yes, one of her friends was undoubtedly a spy. But she could handle the problem. She could get through this. But they had 2 weeks of travel ahead of them. So today, she could relax, because she was on a barge full of spren, and they were all so fascinating. Storms. How had she let herself retreat at a time like this? And for Vale to give up so willingly? "I'm sorry," Vale thought. "I'll do better. And we can work on the spy another time." "Right, then." Shallan pointedly ripped up the sketch of Adolin and stuffed the pieces in her satchel, then gripped her charcoal pencil and allowed herself to just draw. Adolin found her 5 hours later, still sitting on the deck, her back to the railing, sketching furiously. He'd brought her food, warm curry and lavis, from the smell of it. That would be some of the last real food they'd have for a while. A part of her acknowledged the way the scents made her stomach growl, but for the moment she remained mesmerized as she worked on her sketches of the peak spren. It felt so good to let go and draw, to not worry about a mission or her own psychosis or even about Adolin, to become so wrapped up in the art that nothing else mattered. There was an infinite sensation to creation, as if time smeared like paint on a canvas, mutable, changeable. When she finally drifted out of it, to the scent of sweet curry and the sight of Adolin smiling as he sat down beside her, she felt worlds better, more whole, more herself than she'd been in months. "Thanks," she said, handing him the sketchbook and taking the food. She leaned against him as she began to eat, watching Arshkam and her mistspren pass. Shallan needed to do a sketch of that strange spren at some point. "Have you made any progress on that Book of Eles?" Adolin asked. "I've figured out nearly the entire thing," Shallan said. "It's filled with conjectures, though, and not much substance. The ghost bloods seem to be searching for Ba Ado Mishram, one of the unmade, but I can't determine for certain what they intend to do once they find her." Adolin grunted. "And the spy? Among our numbers?" "Still working on it," she said. "But I'd rather not talk about that today. I need some time to mull it over." She took another bite, feeling his chest against her back. "You're tense, Adolin. Aren't we supposed to be able to relax this part of the trip?"
"I'm worried about the mission."
"Because of what Syl said? About the honor spren being unlikely to listen?" He nodded. "If they turn us away, they turn us away," she said. "But you can't blame yourself for things that haven't happened yet. Storms, who knows what will change between now and the time we arrive."
"I suppose," he said.
She took a spoonful of lavis and felt the individual grains with her tongue, plump and saturated with sweet curry making a mush in her mouth. Gross, but wonderful. Pattern always talked about how strange humans were, surviving off the things they destroyed. "When I left my homeland," she said to Adolin, "I thought I knew what I was heading into, but I had no idea what would happen to me, where I'd end up."
"You had a pretty good idea," Adolin said. "You set out to be Yasna's ward, and you managed it."
"I set out to rob her," Shallan said softly. She felt Adolin shift, looking toward her. "My family was impoverished, threatened by creditors. My father dead. We thought maybe I could rob that heretic Alethi woman, steal her soul caster. Then we could use it to become rich again." She braced herself for the criticism, the shock. Instead, Adolin laughed. Bless him. He laughed.
"Shallan, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard."
"Isn't it, though?" she said, twisting and grinning at him.
"Robbing Yasna."
"Yes."
"Robbing Yasna?"
"I know." He eyed her, then his grin broadened.
"She's never mentioned this. So I bet you did it, didn't you? At least you fooled her for a little while."
"Storms, I love this man," she thought. "For his humor, his brightness, his genuine goodness." With that smile, brighter than the cold Shadesmar sun, she became Shallan, deeply and fully. "I totally did," she whispered to him. "I swapped it for a fake one and almost escaped. Except, you know, she's Yasna."
"Yes, the big flaw in your plan. You'd probably have managed it against a normal person."
"Well, the soul caster was always a dummy, so I was doomed from the start. Even if it had been real, I had this overinflated idea of how great a thief I could be. It's funny to remember I had those same silly inclinations before Vale."
"Shallan," he said, "you don't need to feel insecure any longer. The mission in the war camps? You executed that perfectly."
"Until someone else executed ELA."
"Perfectly."
She looked at him, then smiled. "Don't worry. I don't struggle with feelings of insecurity any longer.
good. I'd say I'm pretty good at them.
Shallan. She grinned again, letting him know she was feeling all right, despite the comment. He stared into her eyes, then grinned himself. And somehow she knew what was coming.
Well, I'd say you're a pretty good thief, he began.
Oh, don't you dare.
Because you stole my heart.
She groaned, leaning her head back. You dared.
What? You're the only one who can make bad jokes.
My jokes are not bad. They're incredible, and they take a ton of work to create on the spot for the exact perfect situation.
A ton of work. To create on the spot. As if you don't prepare them ahead of time?
Never.
Yeah? I've noticed you often seem to have one ready when you meet someone.
Well, of course. That kind of joke is a great greeting. They're supposed to be hilarious.
He frowned.
As in, she added, not goodbye, Larius. He stared at her. Then he went a little cross-eyed.
Ha! Vale thought. Ha!
Oh dear, Shallan said. Did I break you?
But hilarious doesn't start with a high sound. It doesn't make sense.
It was a stealth joke, Shallan said. Hiding in plain sight, like a light weaver, that's what makes it genius.
Genius? Shallan, that was awful.
You're full of awe, she said. Got it.
She smiled and snuggled against him, relaxing as she set down her bowl and took her sketchbook from him. She would finish her meal after she drew a little more. The moment demanded it. Adolin put his arm around her and watched, then whistled softly.
Those sketches are really good, Shallan. Even for you. Have you done any others?
Feeling warm, she turned the page to show off the cultivation spren she'd drawn. I'd like to find both male and female subjects for each variety of spren. There might not be time for it on this trip, but it occurred to me that no one, at least not in the modern era, has ever done a natural history of the radiant spren.
This is wonderful, he said. And thank you for helping me relax. You're right. I can't know what is coming. The entire situation could change by the time we reach the Honor Spren. I'll try to remember that.
He wrapped his arm loosely around her, the skin of his hand brushing her face.
Anything I can help you with?
Help me get the clothing correct, she asked, turning back to the Peak Spren page. I feel like this garment pinned to the shoulder isn't hanging right in the picture. They moved on to light topics. A piece of Shallan felt like she should be doing something more important, but Vale whispered a promise. They'd worry about the spy on the next day, work on something else for a while, then approach the problem fresh.
You told Adolin about robbing Jasnah, Radiant said. Well done. It wasn't so bad, was it?
No, it hadn't been. But that was the least of her crimes. Others were darker, hidden deeply, so deeply she honestly couldn't remember them, and didn't want to. Eventually, the strange mist spren drifted near. The creature's free-form shape seemed like it would be difficult to capture in a sketch. Like steam, somehow trapped into a humanoid shape, contained by clothing and that strange mask. She flipped to a new page and began drawing, but the spren, who had introduced herself as Dreaming Though Awake, peeked at the sketchbook.
Oh, she said. Is it just me?
What did you expect? Adolin asked.
She mentioned the unmade earlier, Dreaming Though Awake said. I thought she might be drawing them.
Shallan paused, lifting her pencil. Do you know anything of the unmade?
Hardly anything, the Spren said. What do you want to know?
What happened to Ba-Edo Mishram? Shallan asked, eager. What was she like? How did she connect to the singers? And how did trapping her cause them to become parchmen?
Excellent questions, the Spren said. And? Adolin prompted. I told you, I know hardly anything, she replied. I find the questions fascinating. What you wonder tells me so much.
She began to move off. Seriously? Shallan said. You don't know anything about Ba-Edo Mishram?
I was not alive when she was free, the Spren said. If you wish to know more, ask the heralds. I have heard several were there for her binding. Nalan, Kalek. Find them. Ask them.
She walked off, more drifting than stepping, though she did have legs and feet.
That one makes me uncomfortable, Adolin said.
Yeah, Shallan said, setting aside the sketchbook and picking up her bowl of food, now cold, but still tasty.
But that's comforting, in a way. Spren should be alien, should have their own ways of thinking and talking. I like that dreaming, though awake, is a little weird.
You simply like the company, Adolin said.
She smiled, but the words the Spren had said lingered with her. Heralds were there, and the heralds were a major focus of the Sons of Honor, whose leader Marais has sent me to hunt. It was all connected. She had to figure out how to unravel it all, without unraveling herself.
25. Devotery of Mercy. Whimsy was not terribly useful, and mercy worries me. I do think that valor is reasonable, and suggest you approach her again. It has been too long in her estimation since your last conversation.
I'm sorry, Bright Lord, the Arden said as she walked through the room, picking up cushions from the floor and stacking them in her arms. I do know the man you're searching for, but he's not here anymore.
You discharged him? Kaladin asked, walking at her side.
No, Bright Lord, not exactly.
She handed the stack of cushions to him, clearly expecting him to hold them as she walked to the next row and began gathering those. Kaladin followed, balancing the stack of pillows. He and Teft were still trying to track down the refugee woman's missing uncle. His name was Noril, and Kaladin's father remembered the man, not surprising considering Lirin's near-superhuman ability to recall people and faces. Noril, who had lost an arm sometime in the past, had arrived in Hearthstone on the same day Kaladin had brought the flying ship. Noril had displayed signs of severe shock, so Lirin had taken extra care of him, making sure the man was on the airship for the flight to Urethiru. After the ship arrived, things got chaotic. Overwhelmed by the number of refugees and their ailments, Lirin had sent Noril to the Ardens. So that was where Kaladin and Teft had come today. It felt odd to be spending so much time personally looking for one man when there were many patients to see. Coming here wasn't particularly effective triage. Unfortunately, that was a part of being a surgeon that Kaladin had never mastered. Giving up on one to save two others? Sure, it was great in principle, but doing it hurt. Kaladin walked alongside the Ardent while Teft leaned against the wall near the entrance to the room. It was otherwise empty, though some kind of training or teaching had plainly been going on earlier, judging by the rows of cushions. If you didn't let Noril go, Kaladin said, what happened to him?
We sent him on, the Ardent explained. She was holding so many cushions he couldn't see her through them. My devotory cares for physical ailments. We help rehabilitate those who have lost limbs, eyes, or their hearing in battle. He had only one arm, yes, but his wounds ran deeper.
There were three cushions left on the floor, and when she tried to bend to pick them up, her stack teetered. So Kaladin held out his hand for her stack. Then he held out his other hand as well.
"You can't carry them all," she said. "Let's..."
She trailed off as she saw what Kaladin had done. The stack she'd originally been holding, now lashed upward just enough, remained floating in the air beside him.
"Oh," she said, then inspected him more closely. "Oh, you're Bright Lord Stormblessed!"
Kaladin nudged the floating stack of cushions so they lazily floated over toward the far wall, where other unused cushions were piled, then took her stack. The Ardent quickly grabbed the last three, blushing as she walked him over to the wall.
I had no idea who you were. I'm sorry, Radiant.
It's fine, Kaladin said. Don't make anything of it, please, as if being light-eyed wasn't bad enough.
Well, the man you want, she said, we couldn't help him. We did try to keep him rather than sending him on. We knew he was in bad shape, after all, but...
Bad shape? Kaladin asked.
Oh, yes, she said. Last week we caught him trying to hang himself. The surgeon who sent him here warned us to watch for it, fortunately, so we saved him. Then we sent him on to the Devotory of Mercy. They care for those who have trouble with their minds.
You knew he might be a danger to himself, Teft said, walking up. And you didn't send him there immediately?
No, she said. We didn't.
Irresponsible, Teft said.
My father knew and sent him here first, Kaladin reminded Teft. I'm sure the Ardents did what they could.
Go to level 4, Bright Lord, she said. Right near the center, along North Beam, and not quite to the Aladar Princedom.
He set down the last of the cushions and nodded to Teft, and the two of them began the hike. Everything in Urethiru was a hike, especially on the lower floors. Shallan always knew her way around just by the strata on the walls, which waved in colorful lines as different layers of rock had been cut through to make the tunnel. Kaladin considered himself good with directions, but he had to use the painted lines on the floor to get anywhere.
Still can't believe how much of this place hasn't been explored, Teft said as they walked.
I suspect by now most of it has been explored, Kaladin said. Brightness Navani's teams have mapped all the lower levels and done walkthroughs of all the upper ones.
Walkthroughs, yes, Teft said, eyeing a dark corridor. But explored? You might walk the woods every day and never see one out of 100 things in there watching you.
As they struck inward, they saw fewer people. The lit areas, lined with stormlight lanterns, locked tight and bolted to the walls, dwindled behind, and they needed handheld spheres for light. There was a certain eeriness to these inner sections of the tower. Most everyone lived and worked on the rim. The only times they would strike inward would be to visit the atrium or one of the first-floor markets. He'd noted people taking long walks all the way around the rim to one of the lit corridors rather than cutting through the darker center. Storms he'd found himself doing the same thing. There was still space on the rim of the 5th and 6th floors, so why had this monastery chosen such an inward section? He was glad when they eventually reached a section of hallway that had permanent lanterns again. Paint on the floor indicated they were approaching Aladar's Princedom. A right turn at a large intersection with glyphs on the floor led them to the monastery, marked by a large wooden door blocking the way forward, painted with a glyph pair in the shape of the Voran sword, indicating a religious building. Building was, of course, a stretch. Generally, for a small complex like this, people would find an area with a grouping of different-sized rooms and hallways and divide them off with a few doors at key entry points. Someone was monitoring the door, for it swung open as they approached, revealing a younger male Ardent.
"Bright Lord," the man said, bowing.
He squinted at Teft, trying to pick out his eye color. Then he bowed again.
"Bright Lord."
Teft grumbled at that. These days, after being radiant for as long as they had, their eyes rarely faded any more. And there was no stopping him from complaining about being a light eyes, unlike Kaladin, who had gotten over it ages ago.
If you have come to commission prayers or burn glyph wards, I would direct you to the devotory of Kalek, a little farther outward from here, the Arden said, polishing a pair of spectacles and squinting at Kaladin. We don't take prayer commissions here.
Pardon, Kaladin said, but we're not wanting prayers.
Did you receive a patient recently who was missing an arm? His family is looking for him, and we're helping track him down.
Can't reveal patient information, the man said in a bored tone, putting on his spectacles, then cursing softly and pulling them off again and rubbing them on his shirt, trying to get a spot he'd apparently missed.
I'd need the authorization of at least a High Lord of the Third Dawn. Otherwise, speak to Sister Yara for normal visitation requests. I have a form somewhere for your wife to fill out.
Teft glanced at Kaladin.
You do it, Kaladin said. Sail's out for her morning flight, and she'll snap at me if I call her back early.
Teft sighed and reached his hands out, making a silvery shard spear appear. The stormlight in the three nearest lanterns went out, streaming into him, setting his eyes aglow. A luminescent mist began to rise from his skin. Even his beard seemed to shine, and his clothing, once so pedestrian, rippled as he rose into the air about a foot. The Ardent stopped polishing his spectacles. He squinted at Teft as if forgetting what was in his hands.
"Oh, Bright Lord Radiant," he said,
then bowed reverently first to Teft, then to Kaladin, though the man didn't seem to recognize Kaladin.
"Bright Lord Radiant, I will see to your request."
Kaladin didn't much care for the reverence people showed him. People who had once spat upon hearing someone speak of the Lost Radiance had turned around quickly when their High Prince and their Queen had each become one. It made Kaladin wonder how quickly those people might turn on them if reverence suddenly became unfashionable. That said, there were perks, particularly with the Ardents, who had quickly pointed out that Vornism had always been closely aligned with the Knights Radiant. This one let them in now, absently tucking his spectacles in his robe's breast pocket. He led them to a records room stacked with ledgers and paper, and asked one of the Ardents inside to watch the door while he saw to their esteemed guests. There wasn't much enthusiasm in his tone, but he didn't seem the enthusiastic type.
"One arm," the Ardent said, searching a ledger near the door.
"Name is Norrell," Teft said. "Doesn't seem he'd have any reason to go by a false one."
"He's here, Bright Lord,"
the Arden said, leaning in close and pointing at words on the page. He patted at his robe's lower pockets as if searching for his spectacles.
"He told us he has no living relatives, though. Maybe it's a different person. Ah, and he's on watch for suicide, Bright Lords. One unsuccessful attempt. A profoundly disturbed man."
"Show us to him," Kaladin said. The Ardent finally found his spectacles, but just started wiping them again. He led the way out of the records room and down a dark corridor lit by infrequently placed lanterns. Kaladin followed, raising a sphere to give the place more light, as if it weren't bad enough to be trapped deep in the tower away from light and wind. Did they have to make it so dim as well? He couldn't help but be reminded of his days in prison following that time he'd helped Adolin in the arena. Kaladin had been locked up on dozens of occasions, but that one had felt the worst. Sitting in there, fuming, stewing, festering, feeling that the winds and the open sky had been stolen from him. Dark times. Ones he'd rather not remember. They passed door after door alongside the corridor, each marked by a numeric glyph. He saw not a few gloomspren around. The doors had small windows in them, but Kaladin assumed the dark cells beyond were unused, at least until he heard a voice muttering from one of them. At that, he stopped and held up his sphere, looking in. A woman sat in the featureless cell, her back to a bare wall, rocking back and forth as she muttered something unintelligible.
"How many of these rooms have people in them?" Kaladin asked.
"Hm? Oh, most of them," the Arden said. "We're a little understaffed, to be honest, Bright Lord. We took in patients from most all the princedoms when we consolidated here. If you could bring the matter to the Queen's attention..."
"You lock them in here?" Teft demanded. "In the dark?"
"Many of the mentally deficient react poorly to overstimulation," the Arden said. "We work hard to give them quiet, calm places to live, free of bright lights."
"How do you know?" Kaladin asked, striding after the Ardent.
"The therapy is prescribed by some of the best thinkers among the Ardentia."
"But how do you know?" Kaladin said. "Do any of them get better? Have you tried multiple theories and compared them? Have you tested different cures or remedies on different patient populations?"
"There are no cures for mental ailments, Bright Lord," the Arden said. "Even the Edge Dancers can't do anything for them unless their state is related to a recent brain trauma."
He stopped beside a specific door scratched with the glyph for 29.
"With all due respect, Bright Lord, you should leave medical issues to those trained in them."
He rapped on the door with his knuckles.
"This is him."
"Open the door," Kaladin said.
"Bright Lord, he might be dangerous."
"Has he ever attacked anyone?" Kaladin asked. "Has he hurt anyone other than himself?"
"No," the Arden said, "but the insane can be unpredictable. You could be harmed."
"Lad," Teft said, "you could stick us with 100 swords and we'd just complain that our outfits got ruined. Open the storming door."
"Oh, I'm all right."
He fished in his pocket, came out with his spectacles, then fished in the other one until he found a ring of keys. He held the keys close to his nose, one by one, to see the glyphs on them, then finally unlocked the door. Kaladin stepped in, his sapphire brome revealing a figure who lay huddled on the floor by the wall. There was some straw for a bed beside the other wall, but the man wasn't using it.
"Can't give him blankets or sheets," the Ardent explained, peeking in. "Might try to strangle himself."
"Norrell?" Kaladin asked, hesitant.
"Norrell, are you awake?"
The man didn't say anything, though he did stir. Kaladin stepped closer, noting the sewn-up sleeve. The man was missing his entire left arm. The room didn't smell too bad, all things considered, so at least the Ardens kept him clean. The clothing was barely shorts and a thin shirt.
"Norrell," Kaladin said, kneeling, "your niece, Cressa, is looking for you. You aren't alone. You have family."
"Tell her I'm dead,"
the man whispered.
"Please."
"She's worried about you," Kaladin said.
The man grunted, continuing to lie on the floor facing the wall.
"Storms. I know that feeling," Kaladin thought. "I've been there."
He looked around the silent chamber, cut off from the sunlight and wind. This was so, so wrong.
"Can you stand?" he asked Norrell. "I won't force you to go talk to her. I merely want to take you somewhere else."
Norrell didn't reply. Kaladin leaned closer.
"I know how you feel. Dark. Like there's never been light in the world. Like everything in you is a void. And you wish you could just feel something. Anything. Pain would at least tell you you're alive. Instead, you feel nothing. And you wonder, how can a man breathe but already be dead?"
Norrell turned his head, looking at Kaladin and blinking his eyes red from lack of sleep. He wore a rough beard, unkempt.
"Come with me and talk," Kaladin said. "That's all you have to do. Afterward, if you want me to tell your niece that you're dead, I will. You can come back here and rot. But if you don't come now, I'm going to keep annoying you. I'm good at it. Trust me, I learned from the best."
Kaladin stood up and offered a hand. Norrell took it and let Kaladin haul him to his feet. They walked toward the door.
"What is this?" the Arden said. "You can't let him out. He's in our charge. We have to care for—"
He trailed off as Kaladin fixed him with a stare. Storms. Anyone would turn suicidal if kept in here too long.
"Lad," Teft said, pulling the Arden gently out of the way, "I wouldn't confront Bright Lord Stormblessed right now. Not if you value keeping all your bits attached to you."
Kaladin led Norrell out of the monastery and straight toward the rim of the tower. Teft joined him, and the Ardent, Kaladin hadn't asked his name, trailed along behind. He didn't go running for help, fortunately, but he clearly wasn't willing to let them just leave with a patient either. Norrell walked quietly, and Kaladin let him adjust to the idea of being out of his cell.
"Kallek's breath," Teft muttered to Kaladin. "I was too harsh on that Lady Ardent. I chewed her out for keeping Norrell instead of sending him to the experts. But if that's what the experts were going to do, I see why she'd hesitate."
Kaladin nodded. Soon after, Syl came zipping through the corridor.
"There you are," she said.
"Honor Spren can feel where their knight is," Kaladin said, "so you don't need to act surprised at finding me." Syl gave an exaggerated eye roll, and he swore she made her eyes bigger for emphasis.
"What are we doing?"
she said, landing on his shoulder and sitting primly with her legs crossed and her hands on her knees.
"Actually, I don't care. I need to tell you something. Aladar's axe hounds had puppies. I had no idea how much I needed to see puppies until I flew by them this morning. They are the grossest things on the planet, Kaladin. They're somehow so gross that they're cute. So cute I could have died. Except I can't because I'm an eternal sliver of God himself, and we have standards about things like that."
"Well, glad you're feeling better."
"Yeah," she said. "Me too."
She pointed toward Norrell.
"You found him, I see. Taking him to his niece?"
"Not yet," Kaladin said. He led Norrell past a large corridor where people flowed in both directions. Across that, at long last, they stepped onto a balcony, a larger communal one, like the one by his clinic. Norrell stopped in the archway, his eyes watering as he looked up at the sky. Teft took him by the arm and led him out a little farther to where some chairs were set beside the railing overlooking the mountains. Kaladin stepped up to the railing and didn't say anything at first. Norrell finally spoke.
"Is she all right, my niece?"
"She's worried about you," Kaladin said, turning and settling into one of the seats. "My father, the surgeon you met in Hearthstone, says that you had a rough time of things before he met you." The man nodded, his stare hollow. He'd lost his family in a brutal way, Liren had said, while being unable to help. "For some of us," Kaladin said, "it piles up bit by little bit until we realize we're drowning. I thought I had it bad, but I suppose I wouldn't trade places with you. Getting hit all at once like that..." Norrell shrugged.
"Nightmares?" Teft asked.
"Yeah,"
he said.
"I can't remember the details. Maybe that's some mercy from the Almighty."
He took a deep breath, tipping his head back to see the sky.
"I don't deserve mercy. I don't deserve anything."
"You just want to stop existing," Kaladin said. "You don't want to actually kill yourself, not on most days. But you figure it sure would be convenient if you weren't around anymore."
"Better for everyone to not have to deal with me,"
Norrell said. Syl landed again on Kaladin's shoulder and leaned forward, watching Norrell with an intense expression. "It wouldn't be, you know," Kaladin said. "Better for everyone if you vanished. Your niece loves you. Your return would make her life better."
"I can't feel that way,"
Norrell said. "I know.
That's why you need someone to tell it to you. You need someone to talk to, Norrell, when the darkness is strong. Someone to remind you the world hasn't always been this way. That it won't always be this way.
How do you know this?
Norrell asked. I felt it, Kaladin said. Feel it most days. Norrell turned toward Teft.
A man can't hate himself because of what he's done or not done, Teft said. I used to. Still try to sometimes. But I keep reminding myself that's the easy path. It isn't what they would have wanted of me, you know?
Yeah,
Norrell said, sitting back. He still had that haunted cast to his eyes, but he at least seemed to be breathing more deeply.
Thank you for bringing me out of that place, for talking to me.
Kaladin glanced at the Ardent, who hovered behind them. Teft kept Norrell talking, not about anything important, just where he was from. Apparently he'd lost his arm years ago, in a different event than when he'd lost his family. The more he talked, the better he seemed to feel. Not cured by any means, but better. Kaladin rose and approached the Ardent, who had settled down on a stone bench that was part of the balcony. The man had put on his spectacles and was staring at Norrell.
He's talking, the Ardent said. We haven't been able to get more than a grunt out of him.
That's not surprising, Kaladin said. When you're like him, it's hard to feel like doing anything, even talking. Storms, when it's bad for me, I think I want anything but someone to talk to. I'm wrong, though. While you can't force it, having someone to talk to usually helps. You should be letting him meet with others who feel like he does.
That's not in the Book of Treatments, the Ardent said. It says we should keep lunatics away from each other. Talking together would make them feed off one another's melancholy.
I could see that happening, Kaladin said. But do you really know for certain? Have you tried it?
No,
the Ardent said. Seeming embarrassed, he glanced away from Kaladin.
I know you're angry at us, Bright Lord, but we do what we can. Most people, they want to ignore men like him. They shove them off to the Ardents. You might think us callous, but we're the only ones who care, who try.
I don't think you're callous, Kaladin said. I think you're simply approaching this wrong. In surgery, we know that a man in shock should be repositioned so that his feet are up, his head down. But someone who has a wound to the back or neck should never be moved. Not until we determine the extent of the damage. Different ailments, different wounds can require severely different treatments. Tell me, what treatments do you give a person with melancholia? The Ardent swallowed.
Keep them away from anything that might aggravate or disturb them. Keep them clean. Let them be in peace.
And someone with aggressive tendencies? Kaladin asked.
The same, the Ardent admitted.
Battle shock? Seeing hallucinations?
You know my answer already, Bright Lord.
Someone needs to do better for these people, Kaladin said. Someone needs to talk to them. Try different treatments. See what they think works. What actually helps.
Storms, he sounded like his father.
We need to study their responses. Use an empirical approach to treatment instead of just assuming someone who has suffered mental trauma is permanently broken.
That all sounds great, Bright Lord, the Ardent said, but do you realize how much of a fight it would be to change the minds of the head Ardents? Do you realize how much money and time it would cost to do what you're suggesting? We don't have the resources for that.
He looked to Norrell, who had tipped his head back, his eyes closed, feeling the sunlight on his skin. Syl had landed on the chair beside him and was studying him as one might a grand painting. Kaladin felt a stirring deep within him. He'd worried that working with his father wouldn't be truly fulfilling. He'd worried that he wouldn't be able to protect people, as his oaths drove him to do, that he would make an inferior surgeon. But if there was one thing he understood, that most Ardents and surgeons, even his father, did not, it was this.
Release this man to my care, Kaladin said, and warn your superiors I will be coming for others. The Ardens can complain all the way to Brightness Navani if they want. They'll get the same answer from her that I'm giving you now. We're going to try something new.
26. A little espionage.
The deaths of both Devotion and Dominion trouble me greatly, as I had not realized this immense power we held was something that could be broken in such a way. On my world, the power always gathered and sought a new vessel.
The fourth day of the trip, Shallan was truly enjoying herself. The closest they'd come to danger was when they'd spotted a pair of fused soaring past in the distance 3 days ago. The humans had quickly scrambled into their hiding place, the tarp stretched between two piles of goods at the rear of the barge, but they needn't have worried. The fused hadn't deviated in the barge's direction. Other than that one event, she'd been able to spend her time in carefree drawing. Except, of course, when the cryptics found her. They loved to watch her draw. Currently, all four of them, Pattern, plus the three bonded to her agents, surrounded her. As a group, they hummed and buzzed and bounced up and down, watching as she tried to sketch Wapam standing on the high deck of the barge. She'd grown accustomed to Pattern's presence. She was fond of it, in fact. She enjoyed the way he'd hum when he heard something he knew was untrue, or the way he'd pipe up with questions about the most mundane of human activities. But when all four crowded around, Shallan's serenity started building toward panic instead. She'd almost forgotten how frightened she'd been when his strange, symbol-headed figure had begun appearing in her drawings. She remembered now, though, fleeing through the hallways of Carbranth, her sanity unraveling as she sketched the hallway behind her, filled with cryptics. She'd been peeking into Shadesmar. Her unconscious mind had begun to perceive Spren as they appeared in the cognitive realm. The same tension twisted her insides now, making her pencil lines sharp and stark. She tried to suppress the feeling. There was no reason for her to feel like she needed to run, scramble, scream. Her lines were too dark, too rigid, to properly capture the memory of Wapam standing with one foot up on the railing, looking like an explorer setting out for adventure. She tried to make herself relax, drawing a fanciful image of sunlight streaming around him. That, however, made the four cryptics start humming in excitement. "Could you all step back and give me more room?" Shallan asked the creatures. They didn't cock their heads like humans might have, but she could sense confusion in the way their patterns sped up. Then, as if one, all four took exactly one step backward. They then proceeded to lean in even closer. Shallan sighed, and as she kept drawing, she got Wapam's arm wrong. Spren were hard because they didn't quite have human proportions. The cryptics started humming with excitement. "That's not a lie," Shallan said, reaching for her eraser. "It's a mistake, you nitwits." "Mmm," Ornament said. Beryl's cryptic had a fine pattern, delicate like lace, and a squeaky voice.
"Nitwit! I am a nitwit! Mmm! A nitwit is a stupid person, or Spren," Pattern explained. "But she said it in an endearing way." "Stupidly endearing," Mosaic said. She was Vatha's cryptic, and her pattern had sharp lines to it. She often included rapid, fast sections that waved like the women's script. "Contradiction. Wonderful and blessed contradiction of nonsense and human complication to be alive." Motif, Ishna's cryptic, simply made a bunch of clicking noises in rapid succession. His Alethi was not good,
so he preferred to speak in the cryptic language. The others began rapidly clicking to one another, and in the overlapping cacophony, she lost track of pattern. For a moment they were all just a clump of alien creatures, huddled together with their patterns almost touching. The nearby sound of beads slapping against one another seemed the chatter of hundreds of cryptics, thousands of them, watching her, always watching her. Radiant came to her rescue. Radiant, who had trained to ignore the chaos of battle, with its distracting sounds and constant yelling, when she took over, she brought with her a stability. She couldn't draw, so she tucked away the pad. She excused herself from the cryptics and made her way to the stern of the barge, where she watched the rolling beads until Shallan recovered and emerged. "Thank you," she said, as Radiant withdrew. Shallan listened to the peaceful rolling of the beads, endlessly surging. Perhaps it wasn't just the cryptics that were bothering her, and after several days on the barge spent drawing, it was time to dive into the problem of finding the spy. She took a deep breath and submitted to Vale. "No," Vale said. "No? You said we could look for the spy today," Shallan said. "We are. You, with my help." "Is this," Shallan asked, "penance because you broke the compact?" "In a way. I want to coach you through a little espionage." "I don't need to know it," she thought. "I have you." "Humor me, kid. I need this." Shallan sighed, but agreed. They couldn't share skills, as evidenced by Vale's drawing abilities. She knew espionage, Radiant could use a sword, and Shallan had their light-weaving ability and their sense of humor. "Oh, please," Radiant thought. "So how do we start?" Shallan asked. "We need to test each of the three subjects," Vale said, "and plan to..." "Wait," Radiant thought. "Shouldn't we first make absolutely certain the communication device couldn't have been moved another way? If we're using that as evidence that the spy is along on this mission?" Shallan ground her teeth. Vale sighed softly. But both agreed that Radiant was, unfortunately, correct. So Shallan strolled to the large tent they'd set up on the deck of the barge, using boxes and tarps. It was more like a large cave. While they didn't need shelter from the elements in Shadesmar, it made them feel comfortable. Shallan ducked inside and went to the nook made from boxes that she shared with Adolin. She'd left the trunk unguarded. After all, she did want to catch the person doing this. She didn't want to hover about the place and make it obvious what she knew. For now, she unlocked the trunk and checked on the device. It hadn't been moved again, so far as she could tell. But she didn't trust the trunk's lock. Tin had been able to pick most locks, and beyond that, in the physical realm at least, Spren could slip through openings like a keyhole. She'd seen Syl do it, not to mention pattern. She closed the trunk, and checking to make sure no one could see her around the corner in the box-walled nook, she tipped the trunk to one side, then the other. When she looked inside, the device had barely moved. She had it packed tightly enough between books and art materials that it couldn't have flipped on its own. "Satisfied?" she asked. "Yes," Radiant said. "It couldn't have shifted faces without being removed from the trunk."
"Agreed," Vale said.
"And we didn't do it right?" Radiant asked pointedly. It was a discomforting question. They weren't always aware of what one of them did when another was in control. Often these days they worked together, giving up control by conscious choice, helping one another. But there were worse days. Shallan couldn't remember all the things Vale had done during the day she'd seized control, for example.
"I didn't move it," Vale said. "I promise."
"I didn't either," Radiant said.
"Nor did I," Shallan whispered, and she knew it to be true. None of the three had moved it, though she worried about Formless. Could part of her mind be betraying her? She didn't think that piece was even aware or real yet.
It wasn't us, Vale said. I know this, Shallan. You have to trust it.
She did, and that was what had disturbed her so much upon seeing the device moved. It was concrete proof that someone among her staff was lying to her.
All right, Vale said. I've gone over the places the trunk was out of our sight, and it's not good. There were a ton of opportunities when it was alone back in Urethiru. We're not going to get anywhere trying to discover who had access to it, particularly not from this barge.
I still wish you'd do this part yourself, Shallan whispered to her.
Tough. Go back out, and we'll get started.
As she strode out, however, Pattern intercepted her. He walked up, his fingers laced before him.
He said. I am sorry for earlier, for their overexcitement. The others do not have as much experience with humans.
They have their radiance, Shallan noted.
Yes, that is not humans. That is one human each.
You only have me.
No. Before you, I studied humans. I talked about them much. I am very famous.
Famous?
Very famous.
His pattern sped up.
Cryptics do not often go into the cities of other Spren. We are not liked. I went. I watched humans in Shadesmar, as we had planned to find humans to bond again. The other cryptics were impressed by my bravery.
Yes, very brave, Shallan said. We humans are known to bite.
Ha ha, yes, bite. And break your oaths and murder your Spren. Ha ha.
Shallan winced. True. Those were the actions of other Radiants. Not Radiants from her generation. At least, none of the noble ones, like Kaladin or Dalinar. Nearby, in the center of the deck, the other three cryptics were chatting, with their heads together in a huddle. Do you think it's strange, Shallan asked, that cryptics would end up with the Lightweavers? The Order of Radiants with the most artists? You, who cannot lie, and who are basically walking numerical equations.
We can lie, Pattern said. We are simply bad at it, in general. It is not odd to end up with you. We like you in the way that a person likes new foods or new places. Besides, art is math.
No, it's not, Shallan said, offended. Art and math are basically opposites.
No. All things are math. Art especially is math. You are math.
If so, I'm the type with a misplaced number hidden so deep in the equation I can never find it, but always calculate out wrong. She left Pattern then, strolling across the deck of the barge, passing several peak Spren with molten light shining out through the cracks in their skin. High overhead, clouds had formed, the familiar ones of this place that pointed toward the distant sun like a roadway. Those clouds didn't seem to move according to ordinary weather patterns, but appeared and disappeared as the barge moved. Was it something to do with the angle at which they were being seen? All right, Vale, she thought. What do we do?
There are several ways to uncover a spy, Vale thought. We're in a fortunate position, since we know they communicated directly with Marais recently, and will likely do so again. We also have three specific suspects, a manageable number. We're going to try two different methods of finding the spy. The first is to catch them in a lie or a past misdeed, then push them until they grow uncomfortable and admit to us more than they intended. Everyone has a guilty conscience about something. Radiant doesn't, Shallan noted. Don't be so sure, Vale replied. But if this method doesn't work, we'll try something else. Something that takes longer, but is more likely to work. We will find a way to feed each suspect a different tidbit of false information, a tidbit they will in turn feed to Marais. Depending on which piece of information is leaked, we'll know who did the leaking and identify our spy. That's quite clever, Radiant noted. Well, it's more standard than clever, Vale admitted. This is a time-tested method, and our biggest problem in using it is that I'm certain Marais is aware of it. So we're going to have to be very subtle, and it might not work, as it requires Marais to not only be told this information, but to not be suspicious of it and to relate it back to us. Fortunately, we have a long trip ahead of us, and so if neither of these methods works, we can try something else. Point is, today, trying this will be good practice for Shallan.
I don't need practice, she whispered. I have you.
But Vale was being stubborn, so Shallan wandered across the deck to where Ishna was helping Wapam and Unativi, his cousin, who ran the barge, as they manifested goods. This was how almost everything, from clothing to building supplies, was created in Shadesmar. Spren didn't quarry stone or spin threads. They took the souls of objects from the physical world, then manifested them. The term referred to making the objects bead on this side instead reflect its physical nature. Wapam held up a bead, inspecting it. Shallan could sense the souls of things by touching beads, though Vale had more trouble, and Radiant couldn't do it at all. Spren also varied in skill in this area, and true ability to manifest was somewhat rare. Wapam pressed the bead against the deck, then held up a diamond chip, shining with stormlight, in his other hand. He drew in the light, much as a Radiant would, breathing it into his lungs. She'd heard that this would invigorate Spren, making them feel alert and awake. They could feed on light, even if they didn't need it to survive. Today, Wapam immediately used this stormlight to manifest the bead. The hand with the soul pressed against the deck began to glow. Then something blossomed underneath it. He stood up as an ornate wooden table emerged beneath his hand, growing like a plant at a highly accelerated speed.
So fine,
his cousin, Unativi, said, clapping his hands. It sounded like rocks striking one another.
We are lucky. A grand table.
Wapam, shoulders slumping from exhaustion, nodded and dropped the drained sphere to the side for Ishna to catch. Spren didn't care much for the value of most gemstones. It was the light that interested them. The bead that had been the table's soul had vanished, replaced by the object. Interestingly, so far as Vale knew, the real table in the physical world would be unaffected by this process. Shallan focused her attention on Ishna, who was now trying to sketch the transformation process. Shallan had told the former thief to practice her art skills so she could better imitate light-eyed women.
You are surprised by how nice this table is, Ishna said to Unativi.
She reached out to touch the table.
You didn't know what would be created before this moment?
No,
Unativi said.
Understand. I find furniture. I know it is furniture, but how nice.
The Peak Spren spread his hands in a display of ignorance.
We must work more today, Wapam explained. Stormlight in gems runs out, but manifestations last long. many months without reinfusion, if done by one with skill.
He slapped the table.
I have skill.
So you make as much cargo as you can, Ishna said, gesturing to the many chairs, tables, and other articles of furniture surrounding them. Before the stormlight we gave you runs out, then you can sell what you created.
Yes,
Una TV said.
Also, Cousin will do the hard work. He is better.
You have skill,
Wapam said.
You have more.
Una TV shook his head.
Skill I need. Instead, you go chasing humans, losing your mind, going to fight?
Odium comes,
Wapam said softly.
Odium will come here. We must fight. We can run. We cannot.
The two stared at one another, and Shallan took some mental notes to add to her natural history. Too often, humans, even some Spren, regarded all Spren as basically the same in personality and temperament. That was wrong. They might not be as fractured as the many nations of men, but they were not a monoculture. Keep focused, Vale thought. The book you want to write is exciting.